Welcome back, everybody. It's the TV Talk Machine, episode number 63. Woo! I'm Jason Snell, your co-host, and across the internet from me, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, your host, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hello.
Woohoo!
We're back.
That's my hello.
Back for woo-hoo! More woohoo. Woohoo to you too, sir.
Feeling it. Feeling it, Jason.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Your top list, not top 10, your top lists of the year are coming soon, aren't they?
I am feverishly working on them like elves right now.
So next week, I think we'll do the breakdown.
Yes. And by the way, don't think that I didn't laugh immediately when I saw last week's podcast get posted and the title was "I Missed a Show."
Yeah. Well,
very funny.
That was
very funny. You.
That was what I walked away with from that is, hey, I made a list and oh, I forgot a show.
Yes, it was very clear. And Indy Sarah pointed it out, like even directly. Yes, you missed Mr. Robot. Mm-hmm. Yes. I fixed that though. I have fixed that on my list.
That's good.
Lists, plural, by the way.
Yes, how dare Mr. Goodman forget Mr. Robot? And the answer is, well, oops. It's fine.
You know, that does, though, that does take away my snarky ability to say, no, I didn't miss anything, people. I didn't forget anything.
Yeah. There's so much TV that you can't even keep track of it all.
Yeah.
But we'll get, so that'll be a good next episode, I think. Well, we'll break it all down like we did last year, actually.
Yes, there'll be tons of choices.
So much. So speaking of people making lists of things that they like, the Hollywood Foreign Press, the shadowy body of nobody knows who, picked their Golden Globes nominees today as we record this, including their TV nominees. And whoo boy.
Oh boy.
I'm going to take your advice because you wrote a piece about this for your Bastard Machine blog at The Hollywood Reporter, just saying, you know, just drink your champagne and don't worry about it. I thought that was good. I'm going to open some champagne and do that, I think.
Yeah, I think that's fine. In fact, I thought, you know, I have seasons in the past or years in the past become annoyed at them. I become less annoyed with them through the years, but I think now it's, you know, it's, you can't even... I mean, this year you can't even get mad at them. It's just so outlandishly ridiculous what they've done. But the good news, I think, excuse me for coughing up some awfulness from the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, is that it does open up a possibility, a chance.
An opportunity for like the Emmys to zig while the Golden Globes zag, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it gives the Emmys a chance to take this moment and say, hey, look. Look at the reaction this is generating when, you know, a nominating entity, a competing award show, which is technically a much better fun and more fun show to watch, they have made outlandish decisions. This opens the door for us to say, okay, great. If you just want to play around and you want to, you know, you want to stick Empire in there for your best drama, go ahead, do that. That's fine. And if you want to put, all these ones, like, and I do like Mozart in the Jungle, but if you want to have Mozart in the Jungle be in your best comedy category, fine. What we're going to do next time is we're going to do the cream of the crop. We're going to go, this is the, here we are in the, you know, what Mr. Goodman says is the platinum age of television. And this is the, you know, peak TV / too much TV. We are going to only do the best. Whereas, so that gives them an opening, because whereas it's clear that today, the Globes just said when your five are Empire, Game of Thrones, which is fine, whatever. I wouldn't even put Game of Thrones. It's so low on my list of best dramas. You'll be shocked. Mr. Robot, excellent. I'm very happy to see that. It's very buzzy. Narcos, same thing. And Outlander. Those are just kind of. That's a decision that says, we're going to do like popular fun shows that kind of get ignored, except for Game of Thrones. And, you know, I love that Casual, a show I like on Hulu, is nominated in the best comedy category. And Mozart in the Jungle is a fine show that should not really be in this top five. It's just enjoyable. It's not like brilliant. But my problem also when you start judging the Globes on this, okay, you're just throwing stuff in there kind of thing, to appeal. I mean, they nominated Lady Gaga for fuck's sake.
Check the box. Serious? Got it.
Check the box. That is fucking ridiculous. It is just so ridiculous. It is just such a patent way of saying, wouldn't it be great if Lady Gaga showed up? That's at our party, mm-hmm. and we could give her some champagne. That's really what that was. At the same time, when I'm trying to look at what they're doing, I'm like, okay, go way out there. Like, do Sense 8, bring all this stuff in, do like Catastrophe on Amazon, do all these fun stuff that are on my list but are low down there, like Narcos and Outlander. But then all of a sudden they turn around, they do Orange is the New Black, Silicon Valley, Transparent, Veep. Those are ones everybody's going to be doing, and sure. These are the ones that the Emmys are going to be doing. So it's really hard to read it, and it's just, you know – You just turn around and you think, okay, they're just blindly shooting fish in a barrel. They're trying to be current. There is no thematic. Trying to read this is like a any kind of thematic statement is a nightmare. So basically what they're just doing is they're just blindly doing it and taking their shots. And this is just the time for the Emmys to step up. That's how I looked at it. Otherwise, I was like, hey, great to see – that you got Rami Malek. I would hate to see him overlooked someplace else. Mark Rylance from Wolf Hall. All these fun – Oscar Isaac from Show Me Hero. Great. These people could have been overlooked at the Emmys. Happy to have them recognized. But as far as like anything you could take seriously, oh my God, no.
Yeah, I like your optimism in saying these awards choices are so bizarre and bad that it's an opportunity for the Emmys to provide a quality alternative. I think that's not going to happen, but I think it's really sweet that you might even consider that as a possibility. I will say something not in defense of the Golden Globes, but this is sort of why I don't care and it doesn't bother me, is I kind of like that they're so all over the place that some people who are doing good work and some shows that are good that don't get the Emmy recognition float up in these categories, and you say, hey, that person gets to say that they got nominated for an award or maybe even won an award when they're probably never going to get nominated for an Emmy. Or maybe the Emmys will see them and say, oh, you do people like that person? Oh, maybe we should consider that person. So I feel like it's like, hey, yeah, you got a Golden Globe nomination. Good for you. And I just like try to focus on that level. Like Outlander, for example.
Yes.
It's like, that's good. I think that's a fun show. It's not going to get recognized anywhere else. Catriona Balfeg, is that how you pronounce her name? Anyway, the star of that show, she got nominated as Best Actress in a Drama. It's like, good for you. Good for you.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You know? I'm happy to see that. I can't wait to see her at the awards,
at the banquet,
in my hotel, in my ballroom where I live for 6 months of the year. That's exactly. I'm super excited, and you're exactly right on that. And it is nice to see, other people.
Rami Malek, like you said, I mean, he should probably be nominated for an Emmy, but certainly, you know, yeah, good. You got an award nomination. That's nice.
And Eva Green,
yeah,
she was snubbed. I think totally for the last go round of the Emmys. So yeah, good to see her there. You never know if Idris Elba for Luther would ever be there, or Oscar Isaac for Show Me a Hero. You don't know if any of those guys would be there. Certainly not Mark Rylance.
Well, like Casual is a show that you've talked about. Even just last week, you talked about how good that is. And is it on the Emmy radar? Probably not. But it got picked up a nomination in the Golden Globe. So it's like, you know, take those. You know, for the every Lady Gaga that's out there, right? You take that and you're like, good. They can say they got something. They got a badge from somewhere, and you know that's good. Good for them.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And
Rachel Bloom is a good example of that,
yes,
right? Right. That's
exactly.
A show that is like the ratings. It's critics love it. The ratings are not that good, and it's like a little boost. Like, yeah, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Yeah, it is. There is something to be said for it.
In fact, the thing that's to be said about that, I think specifically, is that. I think that gives CW a chance to say, hey, look, we got this Golden Globe nomination. She's going to be there. She's going to represent the show. Can't cancel it now. That's what I hope happens. But yeah, as I'm compiling these lists, which is kind of how we started this conversation, as I'm doing my list for 2015, and obviously I was involved when they, you know, for many years running in this Hit Fix poll that usually comes out first and has probably the biggest collection of critics together, outside of, say, Metacritic compiling all of our lists together for us. To look at what other people did, I was kind of surprised on a number of levels in that, like, Narcos is way, way down on other people's lists. But it's there. It does pop up, not so frequently. It's going to be on mine. I wouldn't say it's going to be in the top 10, but it's going to be in mine. And to see the Globes take Wagner Moura, who's the head of it, who's the lead actor in that, and to drag him out and trot him around at the Beverly Hilton, I think that's going to be amazing, because I don't think that would have happened at the Emmys. So that goes right to what you were saying.
Well, you know, it's a fun show. There is that too. The Golden Globes, like you said, it's entertaining. Ricky Gervais is coming back. You get to see some stars. They have the TV people there mixing with the movie people. You know,
yeah,
it's fine. It's entertaining.
I found myself in my head, I was thinking, I'll probably get a call at some point when my editor's like, "Hey, when's that coming?" And I was going to say, "I can't make any sense of it. It doesn't make any sense." You know, it's like, I love the fact that they were trying to be a little bit new. When I was kind of glomming on that, I'm like, okay, if you're going to be new, put Master of None
right
as best new series. I mean, they obviously had Aziz Ansari as a lead, which is great, but there's no consistency here. It's the Globes. Pour me some champagne.
Yep, that's it. Have a good time. Well, I was never even aware of the Golden Globes, and I think I've told this story in this podcast before. When I saw Helen Hunt was being interviewed on David Letterman, I want to say, and basically spilled the beans that they have no standards at all, and were happy to essentially tell her that she was going to win, so she should show up. And I thought, whereas the Oscars is like, you know, no, we've got accountants, we don't tell anybody, you just need to come. They're like, the dinner is very nice, please come. And I thought, oh, this is a joke award. But it's fine.
Yeah, there's 44 of them or something like that. It is a jokes award, and you know what? This did allow me as a something of a wine and a bubble snob to be able to write in my review using champagne with a capital C, because they actually do use real champagne. Well, that to me, that was like a bonus. I was able to do that.
Good, well done.
Yeah,
I'm gonna give you the clap.
Thank
for that
you.
Little wine
Thank
clap
you.
There what else is going on? Leftovers is it got simultaneously renewed and canceled, it sounds like. I love it when they have the renewed for a final season kind of moment. It's like, yay, oh, okay, all right.
No, I think in this instance it was definitely I mean, you could look at it a lot of ways. There are certainly were shows that were renewed for their final season at the network's urging. But this is definitely Damon Lindelof.
Like wanting to wrap it up.
Yeah. And I think that Tom Perata, whose book it's based on, would agree. They did a bang up, amazing job this year, taking it in a whole new direction or a separate direction. And for them to say, we got one more part of the story that will close everything out, and then the story will be done. I totally respect that. And it goes to what you and I have been talking about, and like times of confusion and the British model. Like, you know, don't drag it on for five seasons. You don't have to get 100 episodes. No one's looking for that. So tell the story in the amount of time it needs to tell it.
So. Yeah, I agree. I think it's good. And everybody has really liked season two. I haven't seen season two because now I feel like I need to go back and watch the rest of season one before I advance, you know, I need to be in a good place so I can get sad with season one of The Leftovers before
yes.
I can move on.
Yeah.
I'll get there. You
will. And it's there. It's there for the having.
Yeah. I'm an HBO household now. I don't know how that happened. Thanks, John Oliver and Game of Thrones, I guess.
I know, right?
But that means
Game of Thrones.
HBO
Which will
Go
be very low on my list.
Yeah.
HBO Go's great.
Yeah, because they're all there. I mean, I don't even need to worry about it. Like, if it disappears off my DVR, it doesn't matter. It's all on streaming. It's great. We talked briefly about The Expanse and Childhood End, which are both coming to Sci-Fi. Any update? Did you finish up Childhood's End?
I did. And, I am going to... You know, I think that if... This is what I will say. I think you should watch it.
Okay, I will watch
because
it.
Because you've read the book. You are...
Long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, and you're a diehard sci-fi fan.
Yeah.
I think you actually reviewed Expanse on your own.
I did. People can go to theincomparable.com and find the TV podcast, and we did an episode where we talked about the the first episode of The Expanse, since it's out in advance on streaming. And one of the producers of the show, who is one of the writers of the books, apparently listened to it, which is also a little bit strange, and was very nice about it. And, you know, one of our big questions was, are they adapting the first book in season one, or is it going to spread into season two? And his response is, I know the answer, but I can't tell you. Good. Well played. Well played. But yeah, so, you know, I'm on board with that one, but I guess I need to invest some more time in Childhood's End too.
Well, I just, my take on it was same as it probably the first hour or first 90 minutes was like, okay, this is interesting. I would like the people to be a whole lot more freaked out. I mean, I know it's in the DNA of how the Earth is taken over, basically, that it's just so quick and so smooth and effortless, which is part of the hook. It's like, hey, we got you. We're here. And like, don't be afraid. Don't move. Don't freak out. It's over, man. So instantaneously over, in a peaceful way. I just wanted more freaking out. That DNA of that story part did not allow the people in the series to freak out. And there were a number of things that to me made no sense. And then all of a sudden it took on this urgency of like, oh, well, we really need to change the tone and end this quickly. And so it just didn't, it never rang true for me. I guess that's it. Hmm. I think if you know the story and you've read the book, it'll be an interesting visual experience, maybe not the greatest in the world. Whereas for me, it all felt flat and not grounded in anything that I could get my head around.
Interesting. Well, it sounds, I'll definitely check it out. It sounds like there's a lot more excitement about The Expanse than Childhood's End. I'll put it that way. But
right,
because I'm very excited about Expanse. I think it's it pushed all the right buttons for me. So we'll see how it goes. Hey, speaking of sci-fi, telenovela. No, it's not related at all. On NBC, a sitcom. Apparently, that premieres in December, apparently. Very strange, but you reviewed it, so we are contractually obligated to talking about it. So Eva Longoria, she's great.
She is great, and she's and I like her, and she was so good in Desperate Housewives for what she had to do. And I think she sometimes gets, and we saw it in that show too, I think she sometimes gets dismissed because, you know, she's beautiful. And, you know, she plays divas. Well, they all were sort of divas, but she plays a diva, and you kind of dismiss the fact that she actually has really good comic timing. She is believable in the roles that she picks, and even though this one from Telenovela is still kind of in her wheelhouse, and she also is underappreciated as a comic timing actress as far as like doing, you know, physical comedy. So I wanted to give her credit for being there. It was good to see her back. This is her first starring role on television since then. But I think, Jason, anytime you, excluding the streaming services, which were, they'll do anything. They'll drop a new show on Christmas Eve.
Sure.
Or New Year's Eve. Hey, here's 20 episodes of this thing you've been looking for on Christmas Eve. You know, they'll do that. So barring that kind of, it's sort of willfully anti-history industry decision, you just don't see television shows coming as late as December 8th, and for whatever reason. So this smelled like a burn off, mm-hmm. like almost immediately. And you know what? It's a spoof of a telenovela, and I unfortunately, as you well know, there's a series out there that's doing gangbusters as far as creatively about this very topic called Jane the Virgin. So you wonder what I'm going to stop myself right there. You can't wonder what NBC is thinking, because it doesn't think, and yeah. It's like trying to track the globes. There is no logical path that, you know, a like-minded person could follow and find some logic. But it's a copycat in some ways that's not funny. It looks like it should be actually a multicam, and it's not. It's a single cam, which to me seems really weird when you watch it. It's like one of those shows, and I don't like multicams, but I kept thinking, this really needs to be a multi-camera series. It's not very funny. It's not surprising. It's not horrible. It's just bland. And as I said in my review, you can't afford to be bland in our current environment. And, you know, Jane the Virgin can use as many it can use as many new viewers as possible. So I would encourage people to go to that series because it's just so much better, and frankly they're doing a bang up job in season two as well.
All right.
So I'm all for that.
Yeah. Yep. Makes sense. To burn off
and doing that, saying those things allowed Jaime Camille and Gina Rodriguez to say nice things about me on Twitter, which I will take because I love them both.
There you go.
I've got a crush on both of them. Hmm? A little bit more of a big crush on Gina, but yeah.
Makes sense. Story checks out.
Good looking man. Yeah. Story checks out. That's how I like that. Story checks out.
Yep. Hey, I watched Very Merry Christmas.
Oh, you did?
Which Dan Feinberg reviewed for The Hollywood Reporter. You missed it. It's good. It's ramshackle, silly, rambly, variety show-like, but the idea of a Netflix holiday special, Netflix Christmas special, hour-long, starring Bill Murray, it was a lot of fun. And, you know, it was just, that was, it's nice to see a new Christmas special like that. And it's, you know, it's not for kids. It's for grown-ups, but it's, there's some music and some comedy and some weirdness and Bill Murray.
Kids. Not for kids at all, you're saying?
I would not. Well, I mean, I don't think kids would get anything out of it. I don't know. I don't know if there are any, if it's particularly adult, but, there wasn't
like Christmas sex.
No, I don't think there was Christmas sex. No, there is a really great scene, by the way, that, where Bill Murray runs into Chris Rock outside the hotel where his Christmas special is supposed to be happening, and he has no guests, and Chris Rock basically refuses to go on the Christmas special, and it's good. It's good stuff. There's nice cameos, and there's some music, Bill Murray sings a little bit, and it's directed by Sofia Coppola, who directed him in Lost in Translation, and she's married to one of the guys in the band Phoenix,
yes,
who I like.
I like
and
yeah.
And so Phoenix is in there. Phoenix is like the cooks in the hotel restaurant, and they get out their instruments and play a song at one point. It's
nice.
with Bill Murray. Yeah, it's ridiculous and fun. And if you've got Netflix and you're feeling in a holiday mood, you should put on Very Merry Christmas. It's fun and silly, and don't expect anything mind-blowing, because that's not the point. It's just a fun little Christmas special.
Nice. So that's, I like that.
Little TV recommendation there for the streamers out there. Netflix trying something different. Christmas special.
I like it. I will watch it.
You can binge watch it very quickly. It takes an hour, and then it's over. That's the end of the binge. End of the binge. But, you know, Bill Murray. You can't go wrong with Bill Murray, I think.
No, not at all.
Even, you know, even if he's in a bad movie, he's... it's fun just to watch Bill Murray.
He's usually the best thing in the bad movie. Although, I'm going to say, I'm a little disappointed that, you know, there wasn't any Christmas sex, but apparently there's no, like, Christmas ass.
No, I don't think so. If there is, I've completely forgotten about it. Yeah.
Okay. We couldn't have been that good then.
Must not be.
It might have been Bill Murray's ass. I'm not interested in that.
anything else, or should we go to the letters?
I think we've jumped on the Golden Globes and
you mean that spot on the floor that used to be the Golden Globes and now is just a mushy, bloody.
Yes, we've done that enough. Yes, we should do some joy in talking to the people who actually listen to our podcast.
All right. Yeah, I agree. I think that's good. Okay, we're going to start out with Hunter in the 603.
Okay.
Who, as you recall, wrote in with some fact checking about the vice president's residence in Agent X, to which Agent X creator William Blake Heron replied. This is Hunter returning the favor, saying, "I cannot thank William Blake Heron enough for getting back to me last week. Truly, there is nothing quite like driving home on the freeway and hearing your name mentioned, then navigating traffic while laughing so much at his brilliantly conceived, although thoroughly implausible answer, that you wonder if you need to pull off at an exit." Why implausible? Because seriously, the only real explanation that would work for those tunnels is Tesseract technology left to the Sons of Liberty by the advanced aliens who helped the colonists win the American Revolution.
Ooh, I'd watch that.
Yeah, I know, that's not bad. It's sort of like a Dark Skies set in the Revolutionary War. Yeah.
Right now, like Aaron's pulling over himself and writing that down.
What's that show that's about the Revolutionary War?
Turn.
Yeah, it's like Turn with aliens. Just
I hope it's not as boring as Turn.
No, well, that's the Dark Skies part. You throw the Dark Skies in there.
I like Dark Skies. Yeah. You know that, right?
Yeah, with that's the Noah Wiley, right? Or is that Falling Skies? Falling Skies. Is that it?
Yeah.
Whatever.
I don't
whatever that is. The one, the Noah Wiley alien show. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. Love that.
Yeah.
And Moon Bloodgood was in that too.
Yeah, that's true. Great name. Yeah. Love.
Oh,
story checks out again.
Yeah.
Story checks out. Hunter goes on, as for this week's episode of Agent X, Protocol 9, more hand-waving than a Disney parade. I loved it. I'm hoping in some future episode the Vice President will visit San Francisco. It's been such a long time since the trope of a medium-speed chase down Lombard Street has been done, like I would always see as a child, only to suffer disappointment every time guests would come to visit and we'd take them down the crookedest street in the world, never exceeding 2 miles per hour. Can people even drive down that part of the street these days? It's frowned upon, but it is done. So anyway, you guys are right in saying that as a show creator, he's absolutely killing it. Best show creator ever. Can't thank him and his inebriated staff enough for creating my dream show. Also, thanks to the podcast, I've grown tired of my boring everyday existence, so I've decided to join forces with my local law enforcement to solve crime, despite having no training whatsoever, and prove that cop not a cop can exist in the real world. What could go wrong? Hunter and the 603. A lot in there. He covered all the bases there.
He did.
He just needed.
We have a very knowledgeable fan base.
He needed to say, "Prove that cop not a cop is a thing." Then we would have gotten all of the memes together.
This is anyway, why thanks, you Hunter. Were at the helm, my friend.
It's amazing.
Your brain is like it's so much bigger than a normal head.
It's. It's, there's a lot going on. Wow, it's a lot. Let's move on to EJ. Who is on Twitter and didn't give an area code. But this is a good tweet. It's regarding TV deaths. Is Felicity the least at-risk character yet? Killing her would be killing the whole show, so why even pretend that it's a possibility? I don't know if you've been watching Arrow, but I will say yes, this is absolutely right. I floated. I was a guest on the Incomparables got on the TV podcast. We've got an Arrow series where people are watching Arrow, and I was on their last episode about the crossover thing that they did last week, and we were talking, and I said my theory was that it's Felicity. They have a flash forward where they show a grave and people are sad, and I said I think it's going to be Felicity, and they're like, well, but they wouldn't kill her. To which I said, well, of course they wouldn't kill her. It's a fake out. Maybe they're trying to make the audience feel smarter, but EJ has got it exactly right. That's a character who will never be killed off because she's got more personality and chemistry than anyone else on the show. So come on, don't even pretend.
Mm-hmm.
Cause then, I mean, we talked about this with The Walking Dead. Is there any value? I mean, I guess the idea is that it's the storytelling trick is how do they get out of it? Because you know your lead character or one of your key characters isn't going to die. So instead, it's just a puzzle of, well, how are they going to write around this one? Instead of it being an actual worry about, oh, no, I hope that character is okay. Because, of course, they're going to be okay.
Well, it's, it's a Bond movie.
That's right. Oh, I hope James Bond doesn't die in this one.
Yeah. I finally got to see a movie near Thanksgiving. I saw Spectre, and I was like, well, all of this is great. It's really stuff's blowing up, but there's no way he's not going to get out of it. He's going to, you know.
Now, in this movie, James Bond dies 20 minutes in, and then there's a funeral, and they go to his apartment and go through his things. And
they should actually kill. They should actually not tell anybody. Kill Bond and have the new Bond take over in the middle of a film. Yeah. I'd watch that.
That's good.
You know who else is not going to die? They're not going to kill little Batman in Gotham. Bruce Wayne will live.
It's not gonna. He's not gonna die. No.
Young Master Bruce
no,
will live.
No, no, we gotta call him Little Batman from now on.
Little Batman.
Lil Batman.
Little Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Little Batman.
We got a tweet from Dean, who said on this week's iZombie, Clive says to Liv, "You're not a cop, and I've been treating you like one. Cop, not a cop. Right there. There it is. Right on the table. Good one." Yeah, Rob Thomas knows he's making Cop Not a Cop. Let's just call it what it is.
Exactly.
Let's see. We have Hobo Eric. Hobo Eric tweeted at us this time, which is exciting.
He is back. You know, he's probably still vacationing.
It could be.
Touring the world.
He's a shock horror. The last two episodes of The Muppets have been on track, emotional, and hilarious, and melted this hobo's tiny heart. Does this have anything to do with the change of showrunner in November, or is that not possible to affect change so quickly? My gut feeling is it maybe has something to do with it, like the creative struggle at the show generated these episodes and maybe led to them saying, okay, we do need to make a change. But I haven't seen these two episodes, so I don't know. But it's too fast to turn it around like that much, but it may be a symptom of what was going on. I don't know.
Yeah, actually, it depends. It really would. It really kind of depends. I think it definitely is a symptom of that, and it's, you know, of that happening. And I too have heard. I didn't see it, but I too have heard that the last couple have been sort of like surprisingly like really good and kind of Muppety as they're supposed to be. But you know, a lot of shows run really close to airtime, as close as you can kind of get, not like the week before. But so it's possible, because if you did take over November, it's possible.
Yeah, my feeling was that it might be a symptom in the sense of, you know, there are obviously creative differences between Bill Prady and the person that he had running it. And I can imagine a scenario where, you know, they are arguing and finally Bill Prady's like, no, we're going to do it this way. And these episodes got produced that way. But it was also clear that this was not a relationship creatively that was working, that, you know, he wanted it. I could see a scenario where these episodes, he's like, this is what I want. And that the existing producer is like, that's not what I want to do. Or Bill Prady's like, no, that's what I wanted. You can't give me that. You're out of here. I could see a scenario like that, but you're right. Who knows? Maybe they are delivering these episodes. I've heard stories of episodes having changes made to them, you know, hours before they get transmitted. So
yeah, and you know, they even Kurt Sutter was saying he was basically writing lines for people as they shot them on a Bastard Executioner, and so that's very tough to succeed in that well. But certainly when you as you just outlined, when you make a showrunner's change, the first thing that's going to happen in the writers' room is like, hey, all that stuff about Miss Piggy and sex talk and all this kind of stuff that seems too mature, let's, you know, take out your erasers and erase those scripts that you're writing. Everybody change them. Everybody who's working on each little script, make those changes. So that's probably what happened.
Yeah. Another Eric tweeted in just to say, I think Supergirl is getting better. I think so too, but I still think it's maybe not quite as good as I want it to be, but they seem to have, I don't know if you've been following Supergirl, but they seem to have embraced their superhero nerdness a little more than I thought they would ever do on CBS, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They did a whole reveal of another DC Comics superhero, which that can be pretty nerdy, but it actually addresses one of the great weaknesses in the show, which is their, you know, government conspiracy spy, gruff spy agent people, by putting a twist in there. So
yeah,
it's better.
That's good. I have a tech. I have Supergirl, neither here nor there for me. I didn't find it much to my liking. And so with so much to watch, I have not been watching much of it.
There are better superhero shows available than Supergirl right now.
I ask you this. If we have, as we've said, we have the best Sarahs as our group.
We do.
Do we now have the best Erics? Because we've got multiple Erics now.
I don't know if we've got the best Erics or not. I would say we have the best hobos.
Yes, and I'm wondering if Eric, not a hobo, is going to have to now go by not a hobo. It's not a hobo, Eric. Like, hands up, you know, in a crowd. Like, if they were both in
all
the crowd
other
asking questions, like in a live podcast, mm-hmm. you know, hobo Eric. Is it hobo Eric here? Question. And then the other guy in the other side of the room goes like, not a hobo Eric. So it's confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All Erics may need
I bet they're all nice, though. I bet all of the people who listen to our stuff is pretty
I'm sure.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to take a note of the tweet that Mr. Heron from Agent X set out saying that we once again mentioned Agent X, again his Live Plus 3 rating increased, and said, it's like we've got a voodoo hold on America. Behold the power of the TV talk machine.
Yes. Would that it were.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Graham wrote in to say, I think he's in Australia. Have you seen The Code? This is
a hobo code.
This is an Australian show that is going to be remade in the US by the creator of Justified, I believe.
Oh, Graham Yost. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I have not seen that. That's to my knowledge, nowhere yet available.
All right.
Probably in the assembling the writing room and creating episodes, but no, I haven't. I should not have heard of it. Although, as we've established before, even though I work at The Hollywood Reporter, where little snippets of information are passed through me and my feed by other reporters at the THR all the time. I could not tell you who actually is a showrunner or is the pilot season or who got greenlit and what's coming up. I don't even pay attention to that until it's on my desk.
And so you haven't seen the Australian show The Code, so it must not be popping up somewhere here.
I've not seen that.
Yeah, but Graham Yost is indeed working on a US version of that. All right, well, Graham, we'll watch for it.
Yay!
Yeah, more TV. Hey, Tim, more TV shows.
More TV shows, yay!
yay. On Twitter, A Peck of Pickles wrote in. I have to call it as I see it. Peck of Pickles.
Okay.
And this is just a drive-by. It's not even a question, but I thought it was funny. When I'm a grandparent, will I be able? Well, it's phrased as a question. That's nice. When I'm a grandparent, will I be able to regale grandkids with stories of when winter finale wasn't a thing? Everybody's got a winter finale now. It's true.
I hope that by then, yes, you will. Because it's the worst idea, I think, in cable right now. It's the worst idea in cable.
I get the idea of if you're breaking your season in two with a big gap, how you could say, okay, well, we're not back for 3 months and we're leaving you with a cliffhanger. I guess I could see it. The Flash and Arrow just did their winter finales, and I thought, oh, wow, how long is it going to be until they come back? And the answer is like a month. Less than a month. They're taking Christmas and the first week of January off. Like, wow, quite a finale. Why? Yeah. How can we miss you if you don't go away?
Yeah, exactly. Or if they call it not those shows specifically. I'm not up on those. But or if they say it's our winter finale, and then they come back and there's like three episodes left.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's
that's
like
true.
Just finish it.
Or if there's nothing special about the episode, that also happens sometimes. Winter finale in scheduling terms only. And the plot doesn't, you know, there's nothing special about it. It's just another episode, but it's the last one you'll see for a little while. We don't care. We don't care.
We don't care.
I have a not a thing from S on Twitter. Just,
okay, good.
Just S. She says, hubby feel, I think it's a she. It's a person with a husband, though. Hubby feel empty coffee cups on TV is the number one problem of our times. I wouldn't say number one, but I agree it is a problem. S says, me, I'm obsessed with empty suitcases. Pretend, people. Hashtag acting advice. It's true. I'm holding this empty coffee cup and this empty suitcase, and I'm headed out the door. Acting, please.
Yeah.
Some acting.
Mm-hmm. All right. My suitcases are never not like under. They're just barely under the 50-pound mark.
Yeah, super heavy, and you got to lug them around. And yeah. All right, we're going to move on to some letters now. Megan posted, I think this is from Twitter, said, I'm glad Tim liked Sense8. My parents recently bought a 72-inch 4K TV, and Sense8 was gorgeous on it. The 4K TV is not always kind. Some shows look amazing, but in many shows, the soundstage has become painfully obvious. Sense8's on-location shooting really looks stunning in 4K. We even watched and enjoyed the two-minute-long credit sequence every episode. My Dan and I really loved the show and how different it felt. We couldn't really explain why until you talked about the Mindy Project changing how many commercial breaks it had. Sense8 had zero built-in commercial breaks, so it didn't have the usual mini climax commercial break resolution feel of so much TV. Thanks for helping us articulate that idea, and here's hoping season two doesn't have a sophomore slump. Megan, thanks.
Nice. Yeah. Thanks. I mean, despite some of the flaws that I had in that series, it's gonna rank pretty high on my list.
That's Joe Straczynski who does that, who did Babylon 5 back in the 90s. Just is also going to run the new... So Spike TV is getting back into scripted, I guess.
Oh, my God.
And they're doing... Well, they're doing Red Mars by Kim Stanley Robinson. So they're adapting science fiction novels for Spike TV.
I'm slowly inching my head towards the desktop.
Yeah. Spike TV. More scripted for you.
Stop
but anyway, that's from Joe Straczynski, who has got a good, you know, sci-fi resume. Babylon 5, one of my favorites from the 90s. So, Sense8 season 2 is happening first.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait to see all that stuff. Yeah. I'm excited. Yeah.
James from the 859.
Wow, what a mishmash of letters, numbers. That is 859.
Kentucky.
Oh, Kentucky. So he's up and he's in the holler. Just that you know what? I'm in the holler.
That's sure. That works.
859. It's Lexington. Easier to say holler than it says 859.
Yeah. Okay. So James in the holler.
Is he in Lexington? Because that's where the bureau is, right? That's where the
I think that's the biggest city in the 859.
Okay, good. All right.
He may be up in the hills, though. Who
up
knows?
In the holler. Uh-huh.
He says, I wonder if you think that shows on the streaming services where all shows for a season are posted at once can sometimes take it too much for granted that the viewers will watch all the episodes and get off to such a slow start that they can be hard to watch. This is a really good question. I ask this because I stopped Sense8 about halfway through episode 2, and I'm just not feeling it yet. There are a lot of people I know who say it's great, and certainly critics I respect who like it, but if I have to slog through several more hours of this before it starts getting good, I'm not sure it's worth it. Should I be more patient, or is this really a flaw in the structure of the show? As a counterexample, this season of Fargo is definitely telling a big story, but that show grabbed me right away, and we got a big payoff in episode 1. I didn't have to wait around for the show to get good. What do you think?
Well, yes, I agree with that entirely. I would just say my problem with Sense8 wasn't that I didn't think that the episodes at the beginning were not good. I thought they were good. They just didn't make any sense. And so it's like you get that thing like, I don't know how these people do this or why they've been chosen and how they are going from one continent to the next continent and all this, you know, paranormal activity type stuff. And to answer his question, you really don't learn that for a long time. And I think the first 4 episodes of Sense8 were very like, I don't know what's going on here, but visually amazing. I liked the people. I liked the characters. I thought there was some surprisingly good acting there. Also, there's some really good sex in it and nudity. So that kept me going until I figured out what the plot holes were. Or, you know, they were explaining to me why these powers were working amongst these Sense8s, as they are.
It's trying to get – it got you hooked with the mystery a little bit, and you also got swept along by the visuals, and that's what –
Yeah, and I knew that I was going to binge it. I was having such a good time binging, and I knew I would get there eventually. So that's a plus in the category of having them all there to binge. But he's definitely right in the sense that, like, I think there are shows where there is no – you know, you can do an hour where there is not really a dramatic stake. So what happens is it just ends and the next one starts. And I think you really want it to have like a cliffhangery thing to move on, or at least when it ends, like Fargo that week. I mean, I would have binged Fargo if it was all done for sure, but it also works great as linear world of television. I like that as well. But yeah, I think you're right. I think there is some stuff that is better binged, and there's other stuff that's like, you know, you guys are kind of taking this format like I'm going to be here a little too easily.
Yeah, I mean, you are asking an audience to come with you, and if you don't give them enough to have them believe that they're going to be along for the ride, they don't have to keep watching. So you mean you do need to present something, and I guess you got enough from Sense8 to do that. But I do agree. I had this interaction on Twitter with Daniel Abraham, who's, like I said, one of the producers of The Expanse, where I said, you got a lot going on here in the books and in the series. And, you know, it's a difficult line to walk in explaining how everything works. And his response was, that's why we were so pleased to get the full season order up front, so we didn't have to set out everything in the pilot. And I get that, but on the other hand, it's like, yeah, but you still need to sell the show in episode 1, right? And this is the trick. You don't want to do a whole download in episode 1, but you got to do enough that people know what the heck they're watching, or they're not going to watch episode 2. And it's just that's why they hopefully pay these TV writers and producers the big money, because this is the trick, is how do you get people hooked while you're telling a larger story.
That is absolutely that. You're right. That is the trick. And making that balance work is what separates a really good show for a show that just sits there.
And I like The Wire, but I mean, and you know, we all love The Wire, but it never had really great ratings. And I have to say that its attitude toward its audience was very much like, you could take us or leave us. and I say that because, you know, like the average episode of The Wire, literally we would watch it. And we had the DVDs because it had already aired. So we could go on to the next episode. But these episodes, people would have a conversation, and then there'd be like a faraway shot of like a dock and that little like ding, ding, the little bump, blump, blump, gentle kind of wire music would fade up and the credits would roll. And my wife would turn to me and be like, so that's it, I guess. Like, it would just end, and the Wire was basically saying, yeah, that's all we got for you. Come back next week, whatever. And like, no attempt was made to grip on and say, you got to watch next week. They're like, nah, that's we're done. We're done for now. Look at the time. Yes. I got to go.
I know. You're making me laugh because you're hitting my TV critic wonky GUI center, because the first. If people ever go back and watch that pilot, the first episode of The Wire is the most complicated thing you're ever going to see. No one really gets named, or you don't know where you are in Baltimore. Yeah. They're moving you around from, like, they literally go through, I think, five different buildings, but it feels like the same building. And then, you know, I've taught that series many times, and you realize that, oh, yeah, okay, people forget that what Simon was trying to do is he was never going to do the little typewriter pop, 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 pop outside the FBI or meanwhile, right. You know, it was just like you actually had to read when people went indoors. And if you don't believe me, go back and watch the pilot of The Wire and you will laugh. You literally had to read the door of the office that people were walking into. And so there's an inordinate amount of doors that you probably will recognize for the first time. But that was who it was. And you're like, okay, who is this guy? He works for who? What? And it's just – that's just David Simon's way. Yeah. I mean, it just – he just drops you in there and says, yeah, you'll figure it out.
And so I can – with something like The Expanse, I can say, oh, well, you know, The Wire did this. The Wire made you just have to – drop you into the world and made you have to figure it out. And it's a perfectly reasonable way. It's a good creative decision. I've read novels like that I've really loved where for the first 100 pages, you're like, I don't even know what's happening. And then finally, it kind of rewrites your brain a little bit and you go, oh, I see what's happening now in that moment. Can be really entertaining, but you've got to get there. But again, that all said, if you go to a sci-fi channel and say, well, we want to make a science fiction show that's just as impenetrable as The Wire, they're going to frog march you out the front door and say never to come back. It needs to be accessible, because as beautiful a piece of art as The Wire is, it was probably not the thing that you want your sci-fi viewer to see in episode one.
No, you have commercials on sci-fi and you can't sell them.
Exactly.
They wouldn't have been able to sell anything on HBO.
That no, was no. All right. That was good. Good question, Charles. Not Charles. James. James. James well, from the Hollow.
Well,
the Holler.
The Holler. We probably have a lot of Jameses, and we probably have a lot of Charles.
Well, Charles is next. I was reading ahead. Charles.
Well, I'm telling you, we probably got multiple Sarahs and Erics. Yeah. I mean, this is probably true for a lot of our readers.
Listeners. I will say now, you don't need to write in and tell us what name you have, listeners. It's okay. That's not going to be a new listeners' names. Is not going to be a new recurring segment I have anything to say.
I will say this. I think that Yeah, just by dint of having done it already, I think that if you are feeling up for it and you are from the 859, you just say, you know, I'm up in the Holler and we're going to know.
Yeah, that's
no
true.
No other place can do that, though, because of Justified. Only that place.
Yep. Yeah. Agreed. All right, Charles, as foreshadowed, Charles from the 205 here.
Okay.
I don't know. That sounds like a freeway.
205.
Alabama.
I don't even think that's real.
Alabama.
It says. Is it really?
So we're ending the not a thing portion of the letters now. Charles says, not a thing, tire burnout. One not a thing that seems to really bother me is the fact that a car's tire screeching seems to directly relate to the driver's emotions and not the actual physical driving of the vehicle. One example, I have recently been watching The Red Road on Netflix, and at one point we see the main cop character leave his house in a rage, get in his truck, and burn out as he backs out of his driveway. The truck itself is just casually backing out of the driveway, but because he is angry, it seems like they thought it would be appropriate to add in a tire screech. Fantastic. Not a thing.
Oh, and once again, file under egregious Foley work.
Foley, you again?
Foley's!
Yeah, amazing. So this, oh my God, I don't even know who this is from. This is from Goran in the +46, or Goran from the +46 at Sweden.
Nice. Uh-huh.
Yeah. He says, I love the show, especially the That's Not a Thing section. And you're in it now. Being only a lowly computer programmer, I have very few skills pertaining to the so-called real world. For example, my knowledge about zoology is almost nil. This makes watching the otherwise excellent science show, Zoo, also known as The Zoo. Thank you. A daunting task for me. I'm sure that only the most stringent research has gotten into the writing of this almost perfect show, but sometimes I suspect minor errors might have slipped in. What do you say? Can you help me? Is this really a thing? Goran, it is true. The Zoo, James Patterson's The Zoo is completely accurate in how
animals communicate with each other.
Yeah, so he's got some examples. From episode 8, the men that died on that cargo ship were eaten by rats. It's been proven that rats can taste human blood. Rats that taste human blood begin to crave it. Is this really a thing? Do rats really crave human blood? After leaving the cargo ship, thousands of blood-craving rats take refuge in an abandoned hotel. Our protagonists enter the rat-infested hotel. It sounds like there's hundreds of them, maybe thousands. Suddenly, a loud grinding noise is heard. What's that? It's called bruxing. Bruxing? It's the sound they make when they grind their incisors. You're saying that? Yes, they're really sharpening their teeth. Is this a thing? Would a couple of thousand rats sharpening their teeth make a noise? Sorry about the long letter, but these are just a few of many questions I ask myself every time I watch an episode of The Zoo.
My question is...
Yep, it's all true.
You could be in Sweden, and it could be really cold there, and the nights could be very short. Why are you watching The Zoo? Gotta ask.
Yeah, well, because holiday time. It's winter in Sweden, so it's just very dark and cold, and they can't go outside.
There are a lot of choices.
That's true.
The Zoo.
Something other than The Zoo.
Not being the one I would choose. No. But you know, now that he said it, I kind of want to have a drinking game for that one, too. Yeah. I don't know.
That was rough. I could only get through the first episode of James Patterson's The Zoo.
Oh, yeah. I heard that was...
It was not good. Not good. It was actually, it was kind of totally laughably ridiculous, but I don't know. It was still very hard. Mm. Nicholas in the 601...
Wow.
Jackson, Mississippi for Tim. I know he's not going to look it up. He shouldn't. He's an important TV critic and he doesn't have time to Google.
And I'm not very fast.
Nicholas writes, when I was in law school, Law and Order was on all the time. Law and Order actually got New York's felony murder case law right. It was the damnedest thing. I recall talking about it with classmates at the time because obviously we were all watching Law and Order on television when we should have been studying. Also, we had unlimited Westlaw and Lexis accounts so we could check on that shit. We did. Anywho, I'm glad you guys don't have a letter song because it's really annoying on the Flophouse. That's true. I do love the Flophouse podcast, but we don't have a song for our letters. We just do our letters. And then he signed his letter with hashtags. Hashtag Dick Wolf. Hashtag giant pile of money. So thank you, Nicholas.
I will try to find the, just for those of us who enjoy Dick Wolf being, well, the aptly named Dick Wolf. Mm-hmm. I will try to find the, TCA transcript of the moment he went off on the biggest rant about television as commerce and commodity and product I've ever heard in my whole life. It's brilliant. Okay. Anyway, that was inside baseball.
Yeah. Let's go to Ella in the 408.
Ella, that's a pretty name.
Yeah. She says, my questions are about the Blacklist and Person of Interest. Mm-hmm. Why did Person of Interest not maintain traction? I love that show. They should have given it a proper series finale. It's not canceled. They're bringing it back. I think they just finished shooting it. I saw a tweet about it. There's a short. They did a short season. It might be the last season, but it is coming back in the spring. So fear not about Person of Interest, not Point of Interest. That's just something on a map. I love The Blacklist and I watch it for James Spader. He is the show. The problem is the rest of the cast doesn't interest me. They're always so overwhelmed or befuddled. The Liz Keen character, we do not know what their prior history is, so it's hard to stay interested in her because we don't know what their backstory is, other than that Red knew her mother. Can the show continue to stay on without better supporting players? I only tune in now for James Spader's spadering, basically snarky quips that won't hold me for another season if the other characters don't improve. By the way, I know women who work in Homeland Security and the FBI. They all own shirts with sleeves, unlike the actress who is playing an FBI agent. Not a thing. Sleeveless shirts, not a thing. Ella in the 408. Blacklist, any thoughts about that?
I am a fan of the Blacklist, but those are my... She's hitting a couple of my escapist shows that I like. I like Person of Interest and, I love Blacklist because I don't have to really think because there's not much thinking going on there. They just escape. And there's a lot of spadering. You know, you have to have an enormous amount of spadering to get through there. I love him and I love when he spaders things.
Yeah.
But Person of Interest is interesting because it did. It's hard to tell, right? Because it's everything does pretty well by CBS standards. There's just more people who are loyal to the channel. So for a show that big, you would think that it would get a better send off. But I remind people that when the grandfather of them all, basically at CSI, went off the air, and everyone was really interested. I mean, yeah. It was the biggest show on all of television for so long. And then people had to be critics even had to be reminded, oh hey, next week is the last ever CSI. I might want to watch that. So yeah, you put that down to scale for persons of interest, and yeah, it never got traction. I mean, it got tons and millions of viewers, but as far as overall attraction, not so much, but still a fine show.
And they're bringing it back. So there's that. There was a question whether it was going to come back at all, and it is coming back for a shortened season. So
yes.
We'll move on to Lee from the 617. Classic 617. That's Boston.
Well, I just, by the way, just in case people are wondering, we already know what the 408 is. That's why we didn't.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 408 South Bay. It's one of the original Bay Area codes.
Do you know the way? To
San Jose, mm-hmm. and Mountain View or Cupertino.
Points beyond.
Dublin, Berkeley, San Lorenzo, Cupertino, mm-hmm. San Jose, something like that.
The Vale,
classic. Mm-hmm. So Lee in the 617 in Boston says, not a thing. I've been noticing a lot of shows unlocking their phones with a thumbprint, but they put their thumb on the screen rather than the home button or other dedicated fingerprint reader. I get why they do this. It's more cinematic, but it takes me out of the moment every time. Lately, I've just been saying, not a thing, out loud every time. My wife is mildly annoyed. And then referring to our Mac Weldon ad from last week, he says, Jason, please don't say underpants again. It's weird. Lee, I just made it weird again, but I assure you I'm not saying underpants. I'm just saying Hunter Pence. San Francisco Giants outfielder Hunter Pence.
I don't even know where to go with that. I, too, was really thrown by...
Did you get your underpants? Did you get some socks?
Stop calling them underpants. It's really troubling. This is like... You know, I also have a thing where I don't...
Did you get your delicates, Tim? Feet. Did you get your delicate things from Mac Weldon?
This is going to be right there with other men's feet. underpants. That's so disturbing.
Underpants.
No, I did not. I did not. I can still do that. Right?
I sent you the thing. You can get some Mac Weldon. I got some socks and some other things that I'm not going to mention because they're underpants likes them. No, underpants.
Those are called unmentionables.
That means I shouldn't mention them.
Yeah.
But I had an ad. I had to. They don't pay me to not mention them. But they didn't sponsor this week. So.
Yeah. Well, you have to slide your boy parts in there.
Sliding is yeah, sure.
Yeah, one leg at a time. Then you know.
Sorry, Lee.
Put your beef boy pants on the boy parts. Boy pants. Oh, it's all come undone, everybody.
It's all gone.
All the wheels are off now. Yep. As soon as you said underpants, we're.
Hunter Pence.
Ruined.
He's the right fielder. I don't know what the problem is.
God, yes.
Carrie from the 617. We're going right back to Boston again.
Boston.
I was stuck home with a cold recently and tried Agent X, but didn't enjoy it as much as Tim seemed to. However, I tried Quantico and was shocked by how totally dumb this show is. The actors are pretty and sometimes do a good job despite the terrible material, but the plot, the writing, so very, very bad. I read Tim's original review where you question if improbable escapes from pursuit would be a thing in the series, and I can tell you, yes, it is. The plot point I most hated was the so-called midterms the agents went through, where the class of 61 needed to defuse a bomb. Obviously, bombs don't need 61 agents to defuse them, but if any of the extra agents left to evacuate the building, get a bomb expert, or simply declined to die for no reason, they failed the test and were kicked out of the FBI. Apparently, the FBI would rather its agents waste their expensive training by sacrificing themselves for reasons. The malware scene in episode 2 of Agent X is a marvel of logic compared to this mess. Anyway, I love the podcast. Please keep recommending good TV, so I only watch horribly written shows when I'm too messed up from cough syrup to know better. Carrie from the 617.
Whoa. Hey now. Two things here. Let's be very clear. Quantico is a dumb show. It is a dumb show. And here's the other thing. It's not a good show. It's not a good show. It's not – it does not – I do not enjoy that. I do not enjoy watching that show, even though I'm prepping to take it down. Same thing with Blindspot. I had a joint column prepared or getting ready to prepare. I was watching multiple episodes. And then, of course, too much TV hit. And then the end of the year came on and list. We had to prepare lists. But watching those shows gives me no joy in comparison to watching Agent X, or for that matter, The Blacklist. So,
Jeff from the 734.
Oh, God. What?
It's Michigan. It's formerly the Detroit area code, but apparently it got split off. So he used to be in the 313, but then the 734 took it over.
734.
But he's
okay.
Living in the 408. So really, he's Jeff in the 408 now.
Okay.
He just wanted to do a shout out to the Michigan area code there.
Okay, Michigan. I see, but are you from that area? Do you know that? Because you have to do the hand, right? You got, is it the thumb? Is it the peninsula?
Oh, it's down by the it's below the thumb on the mitten. It's it's like outside of Detroit, basically. Like Ann Arbor is in there. I'm not from Michigan. My mom went to Michigan, so she was, I guess, technically in the 734. Although back then it wasn't a crazy area code like that, but yeah.
I've been to Ann Arbor.
Yeah.
Oh, sure I have.
Hail to the victors valiant, right? They're playing in a bowl game. It's too crazy Jim Harbaugh.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out he was not the problem with the 49ers.
That kid can coach.
Not the problem. So Jeff says, so Wayward Pines got renewed. I was totally on board, dug the mid-series twist, and then boom, the last episode made me, and then there's like the unpronounceable sad emoticon where there's like a pig or something looking at something and being sad. I don't know how to pronounce that. Can they recover from that and tell a better story this time? Maybe with Matt Dillon in the shower, Bobby Ewing style. And they changed showrunners too on that, didn't they?
Oh, did they?
I think maybe they did. I don't know.
It's interesting because, you know, Dan Feinberg, when we were all at the ATX Festival in lovely Austin, Texas, I went to see his one where he was interviewing those guys on stage. It was actually really good. And I believe the idea was that was it. There would not be – maybe that's why they had to get rid of that guy, that showrunner. He's like, no, we've told it. This is told. Maybe it's not told clearly because I saw the renewal and I thought, that's interesting.
Chad Hodge wrote the adaptation, will not return. And Mark Friedman, the creator of Believe, is the new showrunner.
Yeah, so that's exactly what happened. One person said,
nope,
I guarantee you should invest in this because this is it. We've incorporated all three books into one great ending or, you know, debatable ending, but we did it. Fired. And then the next guy is like, I believe there's more to the story to tell. Yeah. I believe.
Sure.
That doesn't fill me with promise. No. Although to be totally honest, when I saw that it was renewed, I was like, I won't watch it. I did watch the first, but I will not watch the second. It's like Under the Dome or something.
Right. Kelly Locke wrote in with a very voluminous email. But the most important parts are a compilation of some cop, not a cop shows. I'm not going to read the whole list because we would be here all day. I will point out, though, that Kelly cites Roger Ebert, who called these movies or TV shows Wunza, WNZA. But that's because one's a cop, one's not a cop, right? One's a cop, one's Wunza. A chef. One's a cop, one's a baker, right? So. And also Kelly, is the 970, was the Lone Ranger a cop? Because if so, then the Lone Ranger is maybe the original cop, not a cop TV show. Because Tonto, not a cop. The Lone Ranger, he was a Texas Ranger, although or was he a former Texas Ranger? But it's close. That's arguable. And then there were a couple others that I wanted to mention. Diagnosis Murder. That was Dick Van Dyke is like a doctor, and his son is a cop. So that is classic cop, not a cop, right there. So thank you to Kelly.
Oh my God, there's got to be thousands.
But, there are. But once you see it, you can't unsee it. That's the best part. It's like now anyone who listens to this podcast, in next fall there will be shows coming on, and we're all going to be able to go, that's a cop, not a cop. That's a cop, not a cop. It'll just be. Yeah.
Speaking of not being able to unsee it and going back to the letter about the not a thing where for the thumbprint putting on the screen instead of the thing, so much of what we now are uncovering as not a thing, in many ways it is ruining our pleasure of viewing things. And I'm going to add to that. I've mentioned this before, but I'm going to add to that because I just want others to share – And I'm sure a lot of women have already done this, and I'm the clueless guy who I actually have long hair, but not that long. But I was informed of this as like a duh moment from a woman who said, yeah, like if you pay any attention at all to like continuity errors with women and their hair, it's you'll just drive yourself insane. And since that time, oh my God, has that ruined a lot of things. It's like, oh, right. Okay. Oops, that's wrong side. Nope, it's up, it's down, it's left, it's right. So yeah, watching hair.
Don't do
really
it.
Really take you out of a story. It can really take you out of a story. That's all I'll say.
Oh, this just in. New letter arrived while we were talking.
Love that.
Well, I read this because it's Jordan from the 606. This is the area code for Eastern Kentucky, including Harlan, Kentucky. So this is the real holler.
Oh boy,
we're gonna have to have a holler throwdown here now.
We gotta have a holler off.
Wow.
You know what? This makes me want to holler.
Yeah.
Thank you. Be here all week. Well, really not for all week, but I'll be here next week.
So Jordan says, in honor of HBO's renewal for The Leftovers, I'm wanting to know Tim's thoughts on season 2's close and whether or not Tim was surprised by the announcement of season 3 as the final season. I enjoy when a show goes out on its own terms, but I still think I'll be wanting more. Also, Kevin and Ghost Patty are cop, not a cop material. Any thoughts about Leftovers? I mean, we talked about it earlier, but how did it end? Have you seen the ending?
I have, yes.
And what were your thoughts?
I am totally fine with it. Yeah. It's a show. Well, I mean, they could go on forever. I'm trying not to go on forever, so I'm trying to self-edit before I say this, and I don't want to spoil anything for anybody, and I won't. I will just say that this is a series that is doing things that others are not doing, and they're doing it in a provocative way that I am on board for. So yeah, love it. And but I also love season one, which was a lot darker. This was definitely a little bit more magical thinking, and I like that too. It was good. As the finale was coming, I was like, whoa, what are you doing? Where are you going? But I like that. I want to be pulled out of my comfort zone and along those lines. So, but to answer the bigger question, no, I was not surprised because I already wrote on Twitter that I would be stunned if it wasn't done. And I thought all along that it was going to be a matter of how much story they thought they could tell rather than seasons. Like five. Do we need five seasons? No, you need tell the story in the amount of time it needs to be told. So, yeah, but I love it. I love it, and it will rank very, 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 very high on my list. It will not be number one, but it lost so close.
We have one more letter.
Okay,
Dan in the 512.
I hope this is another holler.
It's Central Texas, so it's not the hot. It's just flat and hot out there, probably Central Texas.
Yeah, it's really hot out there.
Among five best TV drama nominees and six best TV comedy nominees. I assume this is the Golden Globes. Only one is on broadcast TV, Empire on Fox. Three are on HBO, two on Netflix, two on Amazon, one each on USA, Hulu, and Stars. TV for people with enough disposable income to pay for TV. Whatever happened to TV as a mass medium? It's now more of a niche medium. TV critics are fond of saying we're in a golden age of television, but for those without pay TV, it seems the golden age was the 90s. Consider the Golden Globe nominees for 1993. Now, I'm going to stop the letter here and just say I'm actually kind of sympathetic to Dan, and I think this is a very interesting question. However, citing Golden Globe nominees may not be the best way to prove the point. Anyway, the Golden Globe nominees for 1993, NYPD Blue. Okay. Mm. Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, Law and Order, Northern Exposure, Picket Fences, and The Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. Or 1997, The X-Files, Chicago Hope, ER, Law and Order, and NYPD Blue. Today, broadcast network fare isn't as good. The best shows are on pay TV now, and the audience is more fragmented. What do you think about that?
Well, two things. It's not the golden age anymore. It's the platinum age. I don't know how many times I have to say that. I don't know.
You're trying to make that a thing. I know.
I'm making it a thing. See, the thing is, in my world, it's already a thing because it's so logical. Everybody else not coming along makes me inconceivable to me. But no, I mean, you can't make this argument because I get the gist of like, hey, people who can't afford this can't see this stuff. But that it's whether you can afford something or not does not affect whether something is a renaissance or a golden age or a platinum age. It's the quality is elsewhere. So you can't say, oh, in the 90s it was the – no, these stuff, the stuff that's up now is light years better than what those shows were.
Yeah.
So qualitatively is not connected to monetarily. Those two just are not connected. I do feel though, for anyone who can't afford these other ones, I would just say, you know, in time you could, like, you don't have to have cable to you know, find, you can find stuff from at your library for God's sake, but it's, you know, you can do all kinds of discs to rent there. But I would also say that let's say I think there's very few people who are just getting over the air signals anymore. So people are paying for cable to get their broadcast channels. And I would say you don't even need that now. If we're talking about a monetarily, issue here, you can $7.99 stream stuff on Hulu. You can $7.99 stream stuff on Netflix, or you can choose one and go $11.99 a month. And that's much cheaper than your cable bill probably would be, to get unlimited no commercials on Hulu. Yeah. And you'd have access to a lot of things, including, I must say, pretty much most of your standard network fare that we're talking about here. So in many ways, just getting a Hulu commercial free subscription is better than actually having any kind of cable. But the issue of not being able to get access to it is real, and things will fragment itself constantly. But yeah, I don't know. Shows today are so much better than they ever were.
Yeah, I mean, that was going to be my point, is I feel like there's additive here too, that you could maybe make the case that the network shows aren't as good as they used to be, but I think that maybe that's just the rosy glow of history, and that there are still good network shows and there are still bad network shows, and the stuff that's on cable and streaming is additional, and it is, I think he's right, it is more niche programming, and that may be one of the reasons it's better, is because they are able to appeal to a smaller audience. But there's still stuff on broadcast TV that is appealing to a broad audience, and there was bad stuff and good stuff in the 90s, and there's bad stuff and good stuff today. But I think you could, just on broadcast, I think you could probably assemble a pretty decent collection of shows to watch. You'd feel bad about the stuff. But if you imagine that all the stuff that's on cable and on pay cable and on pay streaming, if you imagine that you didn't know about any of those, I think you would still find stuff that was pretty good to watch.
Oh, yeah. Particularly comedies. And then I would probably tell people who just have network television, like, you know what? Maybe you're not watching the CW, and you should, because what? You have
schedule is pretty good, mm-hmm. with a couple exceptions. But I mean, yeah, you get the 100 and Jane the Virgin and Arrow and Flash and iZombie, and yeah. You know, if you like the sci-fi shows like I do, that's good. But you know, you got The Good Wife,
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. You got Empire, Big Bang Theory, which I still like, even though lots of nerds hate it. I like it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff on broadcast. It's just the cream of the crop quality-wise is not necessarily on broadcast, but would those shows be broadly successful on a broadcast network? Probably not. That's why the critics like them, is there? They have a point of view that maybe is not going to make it on CBS.
Also, one of the weird things about streaming, because we do tend to say it's all niche and it's all going to be over here. One of the weird things is that Amazon is actually trying to be, in its own weirdly, unclassifiable way, a broad worldwide entity. Because, you know, Bosch is just that's a network show, basically. You can put that anywhere. And they just gave a deal to David E. Kelley, the ultimate network series creator. And he's going to make a legal drama for
Amazon.
For Amazon, which is like, okay, why bother? Yeah.
Well, that's it. We've come to the end.
Man, did we cover a lot of ground?
There's a lot of stuff happening.
There's a lot of stuff.
That's okay. Next week's going to be way more packed, because next week we're going to have to talk about your best of list.
That's a 2-hour episode.
That's going to be an extravaganza. That one. Yeah. That may be the one that takes us through Christmas. You know, either we'll do that extra long and cut it in half, or we'll just do a super bonus double episode and then give everybody Christmas off. One of those.
I like that. That's a good one. Let's think about that.
Yeah, we'll plan it, because you'll have lots of material, and we won't forget Mr. Robot this time.
No, nor the Nick.
Nor the Nick. Good.
Oh my God.
So it's a lot of TV to keep track of. All right, I'll do the numbers. You can tweet at us at TVTM. You can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/TV Talk Machine. You can email us podcast@TVTalkMachine.com. And Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. I am Jay Snell on Twitter. And that's it. We'll be back next week. You can find us on theincomparable.com/TVTM if you want to look at the show notes and back episodes and stuff like that. And that's it, Tim. It's been a pleasure as always.
It always is. And don't say that word that starts with a U anymore.
Socks.
Good.
See you next week, everybody. Socks.